Hi, my name is Melissa. And I'm an alcoholic. It's so good to see you. I see Lynn right there, so I'm waiting. I hope I don't get distracted. Anyway, I want to thank Dale for getting me to speak, and I'd like to thank probably Lynn and Billy for giving him my number. The last time I spoke here was in, I think, May of 2020, and so this meeting was like the first time that I ever really like went to an online meeting, much less like spoke at one. So it's really nice to be back here in person. It's really nice that like I didn't do well in the pandemic and I did not do well. So it is really nice that that is kind of over now. My sobriety date is February 1st, 2016. I have a sponsor. I just talked to her on the phone coming here to ask for advice. I am a member of two home groups, which I need to work out whether that's allowed or not. Well, whether that's suggested or not. But I am a member of Common Solution, which meets at 7:30 on Thursdays at the Church of Our Savior. And then I'm also a member of Sufficient Substitute, which is a women's meeting. It meets at 6 at the church, or no, at the center at Belvedere. I have a job in each home group. I do service on the district level, and I have sponsored. And I say that I feel like everyone kind of has their own like little spiel at the beginning, but like I say that because like the reason why I have maintained that sobriety date is that I have a sponsor who I call and who knows I'm responsee, and that so sponsorship, service. And then kind of fellowship with other people in my home groups is a really important part of my sobriety. And I recommend that or suggest that to anyone. Where do I begin? So I was born. My parents didn't really, I guess it wasn't like, a very traditional style of meeting. I think that like both my parents were in grad school. It was kind of a one night stand. My mom was just like, hey, I'm not interested in having a child. My dad is or was a devout Catholic, and he was just like, I'm gonna marry you. Let's make it, let's have a family. So I say that because my family life was not always happy. And one reason for that is that my mom suffered and still suffers from a mental illness. She is really unable to form relationships with other people. It's really hard for her to connect with people. She can't really show love or affection. And she has delusions about like people following her. And that especially makes it hard to like connect with her because delusions are a little bit of a block, I guess. And then my dad, perhaps at that time, was inactive in his addiction, but later on he did kind of develop his own alcoholism. They weren't really good together, I wasn't there, so I don't know much about their relationship. They divorced when I was two. From their behavior afterwards, it didn't seem fun. Before they got divorced, they did have my sister. And after that, I think my mom had some more problems, and my dad finally had to leave. My dad stuck around. They had moved to Norfolk, Virginia. My mom's from Massachusetts, from Boston, and then my dad is from North Carolina, from Lexington, the barbecue capital of the world, they'll know. And so I have a big Catholic family in both Boston and in North Carolina. And my parents were the only ones who moved from these big families to Virginia. And so I guess I feel it now more, but I felt kind of isolated from all of my aunts and uncles, from all of my cousins. We were kind of the only ones who were apart. And I don't think that that helped my dad's alcoholism. I don't think that helped my mom's mental illness. So I think I had a pretty normal childhood, despite that. Was very good at school. I was a very good student, and I chalked that up to the fact that, like, if I did well in school, if I was the perfect child, then I would get affection from my teachers, from the people in charge, and I wasn't getting that from my mom. So I strove for perfection from a very young age. And I think that I also was very regulated, or would regulate myself and my speech, my appearance, in order to be attracted to others, in order to be loved by others. So I think that, like, from a very early age, like, I'm getting my validation from outside. Like, there's not, like, a whole lot that I feel inside that, like, that makes me feel like I'm a good person, Like, I always felt like there was something wrong about me, and I thought that I could change it if I just worked hard enough, and so I was, like, a pretty quiet child. My mom did write in my baby book that, like, I was, like, so, like, watchful. Like, she was like, "It's kind of creepy. Like, she just watches you to see what's going on." And it's like, yeah, like, I am watching to see what you're gonna do, Like, I want to know. I want to, like, just, like, kind of take in and observe what you like so that I can be that, And I would be, like, quiet maybe in conversations because, like, I'm thinking of, like, the best thing to say to you, like, two questions down, right? My mind is constantly going. So when I think I had my first drink when I was around 13, maybe. And it was like, what was it? It was like a party across the street, across this boulevard. I didn't have, like, a whole lot of experience with alcohol as, like, a teenager because, like, I'm tall, like, and it's great, whatever. But, like, I did grow 6 inches in 1 year. And, like, I don't know, man, you can't, like, you can't, like, unsee that in a way. Like, my mom definitely did not buy me new clothes. Like, I had, like, just high waters, and they were not fashionable. And, like, all my sleeves were too short. And it was before, like, three-quarter length sleeves were in. And, like, my mom bought me big shoes because she thought I was going to grow into them. I did not. And so I was not, like, a nerd. I was not a freak, but I was not, there's no way that I was popular. I was just like, hey, be nice to her. Like, she'll be good on a group project, but, like, don't, it's not like I was invited to parties, a lot. And so, when I had alcohol for the first time, like, I was like, wow, like, I finally didn't have to think so much about what I was going to say, and I wasn't thinking about, like, what I had to do and all the hoops I had to jump through in order to make you like me, I just was, right? And, even at, like, the age in my teenage years, like, I did have that, like, kind of relief of, like, the first drink or the release of the first drink. Like, I was like, oh yeah, like, I've had a hard day, like, all these AP classes. I, like, worked as a dishwasher. I was on sports, blah, blah, blah. And, like, I also had this kind of crazy home life. And I just wanted to leave that. I will say that, like, one of my outside issues is that when I either don't have alcohol or when alcohol isn't working, I turn to self-harm to make myself feel better. And so I started that in my teenage years. I had felt the release of alcohol, but I wasn't able to get it. And so I turned to another thing that would make me feel good. And, that's just an outside issue because, like, I had to stop doing that when I got sober, that's not sober activity. But for me, it felt the same way. It was the same rush and the same kind of release. When I was around 16, My mom had gotten to a point where she really wasn't able to take care of us. Her delusions had gotten to a point where it was really becoming obvious that she had delusions. It also, we were starting to understand that like she didn't really want like my sister and I to have any sort of life, like I guess after high school. Like I was sitting in like a counselor's appointment with her, and like she was like, Melissa doesn't need to go to college. She's just going to go to waitress school, you know? And I remember the counselor just being like, what? Like, that's not even a thing. But joke's on me because I was a waitress for a really long time. So I went to it, you know? But like, she, I guess, thought that like I was going to take care of her, you know? And I was willing, right? I wanted to make her better because I wanted her to be a mom that I wanted, right? I wanted her to be healthy. And in my, I guess, alcoholic brain, or in my, you know, codependent brain, I guess, I was just like, I can fix you. So my sister and I, we went through the whole court proceedings. It ended up that we switched custody so that we lived with my dad full time, and my stepmom was in the picture, or who he had married, and just switched that. And at this time, my dad and my stepmom are both alcoholics, and they're both active in their addiction. My dad would get drunk, and I mean, I say this, I don't know, like maybe I'm a lot like my dad, but like I was like, he was pretty fun when he was drunk, you know, like. Like if you wanted something, like after 9 o'clock, you could just ask him for it. And he was like, "Yeah, let's go on Amazon," you know. Like it was okay. He was funny, and like he wanted to know what I was doing, and he was affectionate. And like, you know what? Like I had no idea that this was that. Like having a parent be like unable to do things after 7 o'clock was not normal. Like you know. My stepmom was like slurring her words, you know, by 8 p.m. and then like passing out. And it's just kind of like, well, you know, it's better than my mom. So we go and live with them. And you know, it's fine. After a couple months, my mom is unable to really take part in our custody visits and around. The time that I'm 17, she is committed to a state hospital because she went to someone's house and wouldn't leave because she was having a delusion. And during that time, like, I was not doing well, you know, with that. But I was kind of pushing myself, you know, with school, with all my extracurriculars, with work, in order to make it fine, because I was like, once I go to college, everything will be fine. Like I will be out of the house, you know, and I will be able to drink. And that's kind of what happened. Like I went to UVA, and I immediately, like, you know, got into drinking. And I don't think I have anything new to say about college drinking. You know, I did it. I think we're, I don't know. Or young people drinking, right? Like I've done some stupid stuff. And so my second year at Thanksgiving, my stepmom picks me up, and she takes me to like a Bennigan's or something. And she's like, Melissa, I just want to let you know that your dad has gone to rehab. I don't think that he's an alcoholic. But and you don't have to visit him in rehab. They want us to do all this family time, and I don't think that we need to do it, so we're not. And I, you know, my dad had been in trouble with the law, I think once. Like he was like moving his car after drinking a ton at this hotel, and he accidentally hit, I say accidentally, like he was drunk and hit someone's car, you know? It was an accident. And you know, even though the person didn't want to press charges, the people at the hotel saw it and they called the police, and the police were like, ah, we're gonna take you in. And I think that it happened again, and he was about to lose his medical license, so he went to rehab. And while he was there, he did get sober. And that was, I was in school, so I wasn't really able to, like, interact with him face to face while he was sober. But he would, like, call me, and it was just like, for the first time, like, I had a parent who was, like, actually able to, like, be interested in what I was doing, who was actually, like, present, like he was, I don't know, he was just like the parent that I wanted, right? And it was great. And so that was kind of the winter of my second year. And then the spring, I was getting phone calls and messages from my stepmom and my sister that he was sick, but I was in finals. It was the end of the year. I was just thinking, I'm going to be able to come home and, I'll help him in his sobriety journey because, like, of course, I'm going to take care of him and fix you. And he died suddenly, like during my finals of second year. And it was like sudden for me, but it wasn't sudden for like my sister and my stepmom. Like he was basically yellow when he died. He was like needing a liver transplant. And it wasn't actually the liver disease that killed him, but that he had another medical procedure and he got MRSA and died. And like that was really hard to like lose him and like lose him after I had this kind of window of like what, I don't know, this like tiny taste of like what, I wanted him to be. And my stepmom was still drinking at the time, so like it was also difficult to kind of deal with her drinking and then his death. And I was just like, ah, like I did not want to be in like Norfolk. So I immediately went back to school with my sister there with my stepmom to kind of deal with it. And I tried to go to school. I was drinking a ton, working in a restaurant. And yeah. I kept going to school and being like, I'm here, I'm gonna take some classes. And then like as soon as it got hard, like midterms, I would like, I never really like registered for the classes either. So I just disappear around midterms. Probably when like I finally had to pay. Just crazy. And I think I had done that to like a professor like maybe twice. And he was just like, hey, you don't have to go to school. Why don't you take a break? So I did. And that was actually really good. And so for, my 20s, my dad died when I was around 19. I'd say for like my 20s, like it was really just like drinking, working in restaurants, which is like the best job to have when you're an alcoholic because you have easy access to booze and you only start at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So you have plenty of time to like recover. And yeah, I feel like I had a good time until I didn't. I finally went back to school. I was involved in a labor dispute that the cooks brought for my restaurant, and then the waitresses got a ton of money. So using that money, I was able to go back to school. I finished it while I was in school for the second time. I again encountered the same problem of like, I'm like working full time, I'm going to school full time. And I know that I can't drink because I'm just so tired and my brain doesn't work as well when I'm drinking, and so I would only drink during the weekends and it sucked. And during that time I like turned to self-harm again because I just wasn't getting the release that I needed. So like the night that I graduated, I feel that everything came to a head, like got super drunk. I like did a terrible self-harming thing. And then I had to wake up and go to the beach for like, a week in the sun, which was not ideal. I during my late 20s, I started to realize that I might have a problem with alcohol. My friends are getting married. They have like real jobs with benefits. And they're not, when we get together, they don't want to party as much as I want to party. And so, I start drinking before and drinking after. I can go out and like have a glass of wine, but like I am not happy, like it is, I have to, it takes all that I can not to order it, like that second glass of wine. And it's funny also, like being in the restaurant industry, like I thought that I was like this wine connoisseur, but I was also like a beer connoisseur and like a cocktail connoisseur. And like, I was just a drunk. I could, say some baloney about some wine, but it wasn't true. So, part of it was just like me thinking that I would be in this industry for a long time. And when I started having consequences for my drinking, they weren't, bad. Like I started driving drunk, which I never thought that I was going to do. I started driving blackout, which I never thought that I was going to do. I didn't know that I could, but I guess I did. And then I started having physical kind of consequences for my drinking. Like anytime that I like drink a whole bunch, like my ribs, like the lower part of my ribs would hurt, especially if someone gave me a hug. And I like asked my doctor friend, I was just like, hey, like if a person has pain like right here, what does that mean? And she was just like, oh yeah, your kidneys, that's where they are. And I was like, oh. And I was just like, well, I mean, you got two of them. It's fine. There's like dialysis. It's cool. And yeah, I'm just kind of in this like, I mean, I wanna, I'm not doing anything. Like this, every day is the same. So I should just get into, I'm starting to realize I have problems drinking. I finally get fired from my waitressing job because I show up drunk to work too many times. Once is not enough. And I was really upset because that was basically my life. I worked there, I partied there, I, had all my friends there. And I think at that point, oh yeah, after I got fired, my sister took me to my stepmom's house. My stepmom had gotten sober right after my dad had died. There was a period, and then she got sober. So my mom was just like, oh, she's like my little daughter, right? She's ready to join AA, and I was not ready. She was just like, I had no idea that your drinking had gotten so bad, and like I was just taking bottles of wine into, the house whenever I would go visit her, and sneaking them in the closet. My mom comes up to Charlottesville with me and she takes me to my first meetings, which I was very embarrassed about. Like, I don't want to be here with my mom. And I'm just like sitting there crying, and my mom's like, can I get some numbers for her? And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to be here. But I realized that like it's not that bad. And I go to meetings and then start drinking, and I go to meetings and drink. And at this point, like I can finally drink the way I want to. I can have my box of wine and watch my TV and order my pizza and then just like repeat it the next day. And I'm like being cozy. I'm doing self-care. Like this is just me recovering from like all the kind of terrible things that have happened to me in my life, even though it's not that bad. And one morning I just wake up and I'm like, looking down, like I'm in my sweats. It's just so, I don't know. It's not like a super big revelation, but I just like wake up and I'm like, this sucks. Like, this is my life. This is stupid, and that's my sobriety date. That's when I decided that I was willing to go to meetings and not drink. I think that, what brought me to AA is that like everyone was so kind, and I didn't feel like I was worthy of that kindness. And they said, keep coming back. And I thought that that was just for me. And, you know, I start going to meetings. I find a sponsor and we start working the steps. And, you know, with step one, I don't have a problem saying that I'm an alcoholic. Like, I feel that I used to work with this girl, and like when she would get drunk, she would like want to tell everyone what their like flaw was, or like she would just tell truths about some people. And like, so for one lady, she was just like, you're snooty. And like that lady was snooty. She's now like professor of film at Harvard, you know, so that she's in the right spot. But like, she called my sister like two-faced, because my sister was also working there. And my sister is Gemini, so it works. And then she was just like, you're an alcoholic. And I was just like, yep, that's pretty much right, you know. And I basically like fall out of my bar stool, you know. But like I knew that like I could drink a lot. And for me, I was kind of proud of the fact that I could drink a lot, you know. I was proud of the fact that like I pour a lot of poison in my gut and I would not throw up, and I could drink with, you know, the men, maybe not the restaurant men, but like normal men. And you know, I remember like part of my drinking when I was 16 is that like me and like my girlfriends, we all chipped in to buy this like carry-on bag of alcohol, right? And at that time, Sex in the City was big, so we would have like these little sleepovers, and like they wanted to drink Cosmos, but for them, like the booze was too much, so they just had like cranberry juice and triple sec, which is not strong enough. And I feel like I was the only one who was just like, can we get some vodka here, you know? And I thought that they were just like lightweights, and it's just like, Melissa, like we are 16, like, you know, like these girls are not alcoholics. They're not in these meetings. I mean, I should have known that like my drinking, I was able to like, you know, get over that whole like kind of distaste of liquor and that distaste of like wine and that distaste of beer. Like as soon as I felt the effects, I was just like, I will drink anything, no matter how nasty it is, because it makes me feel great. So yeah, I had no problem kind of admitting that I was an alcoholic, but I did have problems even in the state that my life was in, like admitting that my life was unmanageable. And I feel that like it took me a while to kind of understand that like my life was unmanageable, and not just in my drinking, right? My life was unmanageable in the way that like I lived, I kept my house, I worked, I, you know, had friendships, I had relationships. Like everything was kind of a disaster, and there was all these like kind of closets with like skeletons in them that I could not even, you know, open. So I think that like, you know, that's probably a step that I have to work, you know, even to this day, to kind of be like, hey, like sometimes you, Melissa, are not able to like manage your life and like understand exactly what's going on. And you know, I think that like step two of believing that a power greater than me could relieve me of my alcoholism, I think that's right. You know, I don't know if I believe that. I lied when we went through that step. I was just like, sure. You know, because I was so desperate and willing to be sober that, like, yeah, I mean, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a liar. Of course, I'm gonna say yes. I think that, like, for me, really finding a higher power took time. So, like, at first, my higher power really was the rooms. Like, I saw people, and, you know, I saw people, I was a bartender, and so I saw people that I hadn't seen for a while, because they were in these rooms, you know, and I was just like, wow, like you are doing well, you know. I saw people who I worked with who I didn't know were alcoholics, and they were able to work in restaurants and be around booze and not drink and still be happy. And that to me was mind-boggling. Yeah, seeing how people could deal with the issues that they were bringing up in meetings and not drink and not be total nightmares, I was just like, oh, so maybe Maybe I can do this too. Maybe I will still be a nightmare, but like I won't have to drink, you know? So yeah. My sponsor, her sponsor, when she was getting sober, basically told her, you know, you can do whatever you want the first year. Like, I just need you to maintain sobriety, but I'm not going to push anything on you. And my sponsor had the same thing for me as well. So I was told to do my 4-step basically from like 6 months onward. And I was just like, I'm a total procrastinator. And I just couldn't do it. And so by the time I got my first year chip, my sponsor was like, you need to do your 4-step. And I still was like, nah, no. And she finally was just like, you know, I don't know what you need in order to finally complete the step, but I don't think I'm working, you know? I think that you need to find a new sponsor who will get you into, who will get you through the step. And that actually got me to doing my step. And I think I was just like, wow, like she is willing to give me up as a sponsee because I thought that, you know, I was a prize sponsee. In order for me to do the steps and be healthy, she believes so much in these steps that, like, you know, she's willing to like basically cut me free. And in my head, I probably thought, like, if I am not her sponsee, like I never want to talk to her again, you know, like clueless. I do my 4-step finally. And you know, I have my 5th step with my sponsor. And it's a long, mostly because we're like kind of arguing, not arguing, but we're having like heated discussions about some of these things. Because I'm stubborn, she's stubborn, and we have to talk things out. At the end of it, she's like, so do you feel better? And I was like, no, this was awful. And I didn't feel, I think, the relief of the 5th step until like later on when like, you know, even after I told her all these terrible things, like she still, you know, called me. She still wanted to have something, stuff to do with me, you know? And like before, whenever I would tell like kind of terrible things to people, like they would use it against me, or like, you know, I would feel guilty, I would feel ashamed. And I didn't feel that way with her. I felt that like she was someone who I could trust, and I knew that like the stuff that I told her wasn't going, you know, anywhere. Her. And I'm glad that I did all of those things because my 2nd year of sobriety was, I think that I needed to do my 4-step before then. My like boss, who I really admired, she died suddenly. My grandma also died suddenly. And when my grandma died, I realized that we would have to go up to Massachusetts to see her. And this is my grandma from my mom's side of the family. So I was going to see my mom, and I was going to see my mom for the first time in like 14 years. And I was terrified, you know, because I still had that same image of her in my mind, you know, the image that I had when I was a child and she was an adult and she was screaming at me and like I couldn't do anything. And I was just terrified. I remember being in a meeting and like talking about how I had to go to Massachusetts. And just being like, I just think I'm gonna die, you know? Like, I don't think that I'm gonna make it back. I'm so afraid. And, you know, everyone was super kind in the meeting. And they told me that it would probably be fine. And it was. I was able to see my mom for the first time. And I was shocked because she's much shorter than me, right? And now she has this like tiny little quavering voice. And I'm like, who is this? Like, I thought, you know, you have loomed so large in my mind. On my 4-step, like, first person I had was her. And I was like, I'm resentful at her. Or I'm mad at her because she made me drink because she treated me so badly. And that's why I had to drink in order to cope with that. And then I was like, she also did the same to my dad. She made him drink, and that's why he died. And so she killed my dad. And, you know, my sponsor was like, well, She was just like, you know, your mom did not put that bottle to your lips, right? Your mom didn't make you chug, you know, all that beer, all that liquor. Maybe she didn't, she wasn't the world's greatest mom, but like this alcoholism is something that you had. And now it's up to you to cope with it, right? And I think at that time, I was like 2 years sober, and I was just so afraid of my mom that like I couldn't really like talk to her, but I could just be like, hey, all right, bye, you know, give her like a weak hug and just move on. And that's probably the best thing that I could do. On that trip, I was sober, my sister wasn't. And I remember I booked our flight at like 5 a.m. because it was like the cheapest flight. And my sister's just like, I'm gonna party. And I think I'm gonna make it back, but I don't know. She like shows up in the room at like 4 o'clock, like reeking of booze. And me, like newly sober, is just like, this, you know, drunk, this like mess up, right? We have a hard time in the airport. And because all the tickets were on her phone for some reason, and like she can't like you know get it, and we have to run, and she can't really run. And like when we get on the plane, the flight attendant's like, are you gonna be able to like be on this flight? You know, like you smell like alcohol, your skirt is ripped, everyone saw your butt. And I was just like, I'm here, I'm taking care of her, blah blah blah. It was super uncomfortable, it was awful, and I felt justified in my anger, right? And I get home and I tell my sponsor, and I'm like, you won't believe what Jen did. And my sponsor is like, would you have ever booked that flight, you know, at that time when you were drinking? And I was like, absolutely not. I could have definitely been still drunk. And she was just like, you can't judge your sister, you know, for this. Like, this is new for her. And you're not justified in your like kind of cruelty to her at this point. And so like when I was doing my amends with my sister, like that was one of the things that I told her that I'm sorry about. I was just like, Jen, I treated you really badly after that. Like we got to the car and her like fiance was there, and he was just like, what is going on? Because y'all aren't talking and it is so tense, you know? And so I'm apologizing for this. And I finally tell her that I was just like, yeah, you know, my sponsor told me that I was in the wrong, but you did nothing wrong. And like at that moment when I'm making my amends, like I could see like the surprise on her face, you know, like because I know that like when I was getting sober, I felt so much shame at like everything that I had done, you know? And I thought that I was like this horrible person. And I thought that everyone thought so badly about me, you know, and carried that kind of like belief that I'm just this messy, terrible person. And for me to like, I don't know, like admit that like I treated her badly, even though that she was like in this, she was sick at that time, right? And she was showing, you know, the kind of consequences of her sickness. She's since sober, she doesn't go to AA, but she doesn't drink. And for that, I'm super grateful. I think that with her, you know, she got a DUI. She had to go to jail for a night. It wasn't good. And when she called me, you know, that night, or I called her, she didn't call me. You know, I think that like I was able to be a, because I had been in AA. I think this was also my second year of sobriety, sorry. I was able to be kind of loving in the way that I talked to her, you know, and I was able to say like, hey, like our dad died of this when we were in our 30s. His mom died of alcoholism when my dad was 20. Like, we don't know what happened in the past, but like, I'd say it's a pretty good, you know, chance that like both of us, if we continue drinking, are going to die in our 50s, you know, of this. And I just don't want you to die right that soon. Like I can't take it. And she went to meetings, but it just wasn't her thing. And I think that like because I was kind of well versed at that time in the traditions, I was able to like not push AA on her and not make it like, not be like, you have to be, in AA if you want to be sober. And like, I'm not, gonna talk to you if you don't do this. Like, I could just be like, hey, just take it or not, right? I'm trying to think. What else has happened in sobriety? I think that oh yeah, the pandemic. I think that for me, like the pandemic, that happened when I was about, oh yeah, 4 years sober. And for me, when that happened, I was so scared. I was just like, I'm going to die. Even when it was like 20 people in the state, which I knew were like had COVID, I was just like, I cannot go outside. I cannot talk to people. I live by myself. I was a mess. I was the person wiping things down with bleach. I was so afraid, and it was because like I kind of lost my faith in God at that time, right? Like I didn't think that God was going to carry me through this. I thought that I was going to die, and I thought that like I was the only one who could protect myself against the virus. And it took a while for me to get over that. I had some very, considerate bosses who allowed me to take some time in coming back to the office, but I did have to come back to the office, which was good for me. My sponsor and some other women started an outside meeting, which I really needed because I was not doing well on Zoom. And it took a long time for me to just kind of, I don't know, like almost regain my faith in God. I don't know like what prompted it, but I think that it was just kind of just going through the motions one day at a time, and I hope that I have learned from that, if another pandemic, when another pandemic happens, or in another, kind of situation where I am terrified and I don't know what I'm going to do, that I can still go to AA to practice service, to reach out to others, which I'm bad at, to ask for help. I think that after the pandemic, I really, started to realize what a gift the rooms were, what a gift my friends and sponsor were. And I think that that has helped me in my relationship with my mom. She is still unwell, and but I'm able to take her calls and text her. She has visited, announced and unannounced. And, just this Memorial Day, she showed up at my work. I got a text from like someone in the office being like, Melissa, it's Friday morning. They're like, Melissa, you have a visitor. And I'm like working from home. And I'm like, why would a client drop by? That's crazy. I would never schedule that Friday morning. And I'm like, who is it? And he was like, it's your mom. And he has like the kind of laughing like emoji afterwards, but crying. And I'm like, wow. Anyway, so I get in the car and I call my sponsor. I'm like, this lady. And I go and pick her up. I was like, get in the car. We're not doing this here. And I did, anyway, but I was able to be kind after saying, I do not like this. And we had breakfast, it was nice. She needed to then go to her hotel, which she had booked. She had booked a hotel because she had taken an all-night bus trip, which I don't know why. And I was able to spend what time with her the next day. It's hard for me. It has been hard for me to understand like that she has mental illness And like me with my alcoholism, this was a disease that like I did not ask for. When it's active, I do things that are not normal, that are not rational. And unlike her, I have a solution that I can come to. But for her, there's not much that works to like cure her mental illness. And so it's sad because like I think the one thing that she wants is like connection, but she cannot get it and she can't do that, She can't connect with people. And so it is like hard for me sometimes, especially when she shows up unannounced, to really understand that like she is sick and suffering, right? And that I need to treat her with love and kindness, just as I would, another sick and suffering alcoholic. I feel that like I am doing this to be a good daughter. I'm not really doing this because I want to, but this is like a thing where like I'm not sure what I would do if like she was to die and like I am not, had at least a relationship with her. Would I have gone out drinking? I don't know. I know that I would have felt pretty bad. And so this is just something that I gotta do. And it's what it is. It's something that I have to work on, right? I think that like my life today is really good. I mean, I think that like I'm very lucky for like all the stuff that I've been given and all the people that whose presence I've been gifted. I'm working, and it's good. I'm also going to school, and that's a little hard to balance with work. And I am a procrastinator, and I do not manage my time well. So I am learning how to do that. I do want to know how to do it better. I have been able to have relationships with my friends. When I first got sober, I couldn't really interact with them. I was so scared of drinking that I couldn't like hang out with my friends, right? I couldn't do anything. I didn't even tell them that I was getting sober. I showed up a year later after I quit drinking at like a wedding, and I was so afraid. And everyone was just like, "Oh, Melissa, you're not drinking?" And I'm like, "No." But no one has been like, "Melissa, are you sure you don't want to drink?" Like everyone is just like, "Can I get you more seltzer? Like, do you want juice?" And like, no one misses the drunk me, and that is something that I'm grateful for. I mean, I think that I can see like that the steps do work because I know people who give up drinking and they become nightmares, right? And I quit drinking and I became the friend that they had before. I'm able to, show up for them. I'm able to show up for my family. So I'm grateful. I think that like some days life is hard, right? And you're like, "God, I don't want to do this." And maybe that is a prayer because I end up with like, but I guess I'm going to. And I say thank you at the end of the day because at the end of the day, I fall asleep without ruminating, right? And before when I was drinking, I would lie in bed and I would think about all the dumb things I had said. I would worry about like all the things that I had done blackout drunk. I was having imaginary fights in my head with people I was mad at. And now I just go to sleep, which is really nice. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed this kind of. Thank you.
Thank you.